Well, good morning, everybody. excuse me, 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and Nate from Strictly Diesel is sitting next to me. So if you have a question about diesels, because that's how we're going to open up the show, we're going to talk about diesels. We're going to talk about our favorite trucks and our not-so-favorite trucks. We're going to talk about which truck we like to see come in and which one we don't like to see come in. So just start filling up all those things in your file. Okay, so, and then we'll be able to hear you after I turn your mic on.
There we go.
I'm going to move your microphone up right there. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. And Nate is from Strictly Diesel, 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak Road. You've been working on diesels since when?
1990. Yeah.
So you've got
dating myself.
30 years of greasy fingernails, and your wife says, go outside and eat your dinner.
Not often.
Okay, no. But it still happens.
It
still happens. So you got. Why did you get into diesels?
That's a great question.
Was it accidentally or on purpose?
Yes.
Okay.
I went to the asset program at Glendale Community College.
Okay.
So I got the tour pretty much and work in every area of the dealership at mm-hmm. the time. I was doing automatic transmissions.
Okay.
And I was enjoying that beyond all get out. And my shop foreman came to me one day and he says, Nate, go help the diesel guy.
That was it. It's like cocaine and heroin. You know what
yeah.
I mean? It just, you get there and you hear those big monsters running and then they start talking about doubling the turbo boost. And then all of a sudden you see a truck that's got a diesel engine that down at the drag strip, wink, 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 he can burn the tires for a quarter mile,
yeah.
stuff like that. So anyway, if you have a diesel question, we've got the best diesel guy in town as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
Nate from Strictly Diesel is here to help you, but we have Mike already. So, Mike.
Yeah, let's talk to Mike.
Yeah, Mike, what can we do for you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Mike here in Peoples Valley, Arizona.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, my question doesn't have anything to do with a diesel engine, but it is a truck question. I have a 2007 Chevy Silverado Classic, and what it started doing last week on me is when I'm going from a stop, like at a stoplight, when I take off from a stop, it goes in first gear, takes off, but when it goes into second gear, there's a slight hesitation and then a hard bump, kind of a slam going into second gear. I wanted to see what you think your opinion is of that.
What do you think, Nick?
Sounds transmission related.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Can you manually shift it? Does that change anything if you pull it into low and you just shift it yourself?
Boy, I haven't tried that.
Okay. Have you had any change of fluid in a while? Somebody took it apart and changed the fluid or anything like that with the pan off?
No, but that's what I was wondering. You know, maybe the fluid needs to be changed. I mean, it looks clean, but it has been a while.
Do you see a leak in your driveway?
No, no leaks.
Okay.
You know, I'm thinking out loud that I've never fixed a tranny from shifting by changing the fluid. Everybody does that first.
Right.
Plug filters have a different symptom than what he has, and he's got if I can recount, you had a hard shift into two.
Yeah, kind of a hesitation, and it's almost like a slam in the second. It feels like you hit a hard bump or something. It's like, what was that? You know.
You think that's a 700R4 in that 07?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. I can't help you. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in the west side, about 43rd Avenue in Glendale.
Okay. I would stop by Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School, not on Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, and ask them if they would take a ride with you and you can demonstrate a transmission issue. And
okay.
I'd say, you know, I'd be happy to pay for your time. But Bob's really good there, and his son-in-law, Jeremy. And between the two of them, they've probably seen your problem before and have probably fixed it and have probably misdiagnosed it three or four times on the front end of this learning curve until they actually fixed it. That's what I'd do.
Right. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's I mainly wanted to see where you recommended I go to because it's hard to find a good place.
Yeah, I trust me, Harker's is a really good place, and they're really good diagnosticians, and I've sent a couple of cars to them that nobody could fix, and they fixed them. So I'm pretty confident that they'll do a good job for you.
Awesome.
Okay.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks a lot for your help.
You betcha. Thank you.
Thank you.
602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we have another caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Mark.
Mark, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
You know, I'm in studio, and I'm not wearing silver bracelets, so I'm in pretty good shape.
Glad to hear it. So I have a 2013 Toyota Camry LE, 150,000 miles, and starting about 3 weeks ago, just randomly, the blower will stop, both for AC and heat, and we'll just stop for maybe a day, and then I'll start the car again, and everything's working fine. The AC is ice cold, heat, and everything, and then it'll run great for 5 or 6 days, and then I'll pull in for gas, turn it off, and start it, and no blower.
I don't know where the blower is on your Camry, but it's going to be on the passenger side firewall, either on the outside in the engine compartment or underneath the glove box. You can find it by just...
I've identified where that is. I was just wondering, is that something that a blower will do, that it can just go in and out like that intermittently?
If you promise to put an extra $5 in the plate next time, I'm going to tell you what to do.
Okay.
Just take a hammer, and with the wooden side of the handle, when it's not blowing, strike the back of the blower motor, and it'll come back on. And so you do that 2 or 3 times.
If that works, then I know what to replace.
Yeah, 2 or 3 times. And then if you wanted to take it apart, you could look in the brushes or not hitting the armature in the back. And here's the key. Every time you strike it, it starts blowing. That eliminates the switch, the resistor. That eliminates everything in the climate controls. The blower motor's the problem. So that's what I do.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You betcha. Do you fix a lot of cars with a hammer?
One of our favorite tools.
We do. We actually do.
Yeah, it's a useful tool.
You walk underneath the car and you're dinging the suspension. All of a sudden you have a clunk.
Yep.
Or you got your hand on this part and you hit this part and you can feel. Well, there's a bushing in between them.
Yep.
Okay, we got another caller. Who might that be?
That would be Andy.
Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Good. I've got a 2007 Lexus. And I'm having a hard time starting it. I'll push the button, and it'll seem like it catches, and then it dies. And if I try and get the foot to the gas pedal soon enough, it'll catch. But I don't know if it would have caught anyway, or, at that particular time, or if there's related somehow. But I'm also wondering, my wife doesn't have this problem. Could it be related to the fob?
No, if it ever starts, I don't think it can, because if your fob was defective or the program, it would never start.
Okay.
Now, let me clear up some words we're using here. You go in and you crank it, but the engine doesn't start or catch, right?
It sounds like it catches, so I take my finger off the button, and it dies.
Okay. We got to determine if it's spark or fuel. It's not going to be spark, because that's not a symptom, but it is a symptom of fuel. Is this your wife's car or your car?
It's my wife's car, but
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I drive it occasionally.
Where does she typically keep the level of fuel in her tank?
It's usually full.
Okay.
Close to full.
How many miles are on it?
116,000.
Okay.
And now I had it to the dealer when I had the oil changed, and they could not replicate the issue, and evidently none of the diagnostics indicated anything.
No, we don't have a piece of equipment that's going to do this. And as a matter of fact, when we start dealing with fuel issues, all you can do is put a pressure gauge on there and turn the key on in the morning and make sure you have the adequate fuel pressure.
But it doesn't happen for her. That's the strange
thing. I know, but what difference does that make? You know what
I'm
saying?
That's why I was thinking the fob.
No,
she
well.
Her own fob, I got a new fob.
Well, if that's the case, switch fobs with her. Okay.
Well, I could do that.
Yeah.
But I don't want her getting stuck.
Well, I can't. It doesn't do any good to start. I mean, you can start guessing. You only have two choices at this point. You can start guessing intelligently, or you can wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Because if we can't duplicate it, it's really hard to fix it. Try this.
Yeah.
Cycle the key when it's you. Turn the key to the on position, but not to the crank position. So you're just going to push your button.
There's no key.
I understand. Push the button once to turn on the accessories, but don't hold it down where it cranks. So push the button, count to five, turn the button off. Push the button again, count to five, and turn it off. What we're doing is we're pressurizing the fuel system.
And
then you hit it the third time and see if it starts and runs. If it does, then you're leaking fuel pressure overnight. And I can't explain why it doesn't happen to your wife, because once we fix it, we can explain that.
One minute.
But we can't explain it in advance. You just got to fix what's on the plate in front of you. So if you cycle the key on and off three times, then you've built fuel pressure. You push it to the start position. Boom, it starts right up. Everything's fine. Then the next couple mornings, you go back and forth to no, pushing the button and priming the fuel system, and now I have a problem. Or every time I do, I don't. Most of the time, the injector's leaking. Look for black smoke, or the fuel pressure regulator's bad. Most of the time, so that's what I'd look at. It's somebody's going to have to get it to duplicate and have all their equipment on there. We're going to look for spark and fuel. So that's what they should have done. But if they had it 3 days and they couldn't get it to act up, then you know there's nothing they can do. In your case, the best thing is just swap fobs. And that'll eliminate that.
All right.
And then what you want to use is this. The car cranks over, appears to kind of start or catch, and then doesn't. So there seems to be some extended cranking. Then it seems like the car wants to start because the tone of the cranking changes, but it doesn't. And then when my wife drives it, she pushes the button and it starts every time. Let me ask you a question. When you drive it, is the car parked different places than when she drives it?
No.
Okay.
The
reason I ask that is you park on level ground. She parks with the butt of the car near the sidewalk and the nose is up in the air. Or it's the other way around. So I ask you that just to see where the fuel in the tank and if that can affect this. But that's it, Andy. Good luck. And if you figure out what it is, I'd be interested in knowing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I could learn from whoever fixes it. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And I'm just having a tough time with my headphones. So
still sounding?
Yeah, I've just got this raspy, you know, sound. But it's got to be Gil's fault. it does, because whenever things bad happens, it's
there. Good over here, Mark.
Say that again.
Sound good over here.
Yeah, I know. I don't sound good to me. That's the problem. This portion of Unlimited is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing since 1970. Brian and Thelma have been running this car repair shop, and they've done a good job. Both of their families were in the gas station and the car repair business back in the 60s and the 70s. So they've been around the block, and they know what oil smells like and feels like. So they're the only place in Mesa I can recommend. It's not that there's no good shops in Mesa. It's just that they have to pass a certain level of expertise, and I just have a tough time with that. So Thompson's can do it. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and they're well worth the extra mile drive. Let's go to Derek. Derek, good morning.
Hey, Mark. So my job's trying to keep me employed while this COVID virus thing is, and we have about 7 or 8 of those side-by-side Kubotas.
Uh-huh.
And we have one that runs, and the other ones have all died through the years, and no one really knows how to fix them. However, I'm pretty handy with cars, and I have a full range of tools. But these being diesels, I'm a little lost. In this particular instance, I have one Kubota that turns over all day long. It turns over really strong, but it will not fire. And so I introduced propane to see if it would kind of start to run or chug or change tone. I have no other reason or no other ideas on how to diagnose. Do you have any advice for me?
Well, yeah, I'm going to give it to Nate, but did the propane make any difference?
It didn't seem to make any difference.
Okay. Well, Nate's got his hand up in the air. Now he has two. Go, take it away.
What years are these Kubotas?
These are about 10 years old.
10 years. Okay. Can you find the injection pump, and what does that look like? Is there several wires going to it or just a single wire?
I believe there's... I'm not with them, but going off of memory, I believe there's three.
Okay. I'm going to guess, because I don't see those on a daily basis, but you want to make sure you have 12 volts to the injection pump when you turn the key on or whatever the key is. And yeah, they'll crank all day, but if you don't have 12 volts to the injection pump, you're not igniting or turning on that pump. Second of all, fuel, if these have been sitting for a while, is the fuel in decent shape?
The fuel, when I opened the tank and I kind of sampled the fuel, it seemed to be relatively fresh.
Okay.
Someone may have attempted that. The fuel did seem pretty fresh, but I don't know enough about it to know if it is or not.
Just because things happen when they sit, I would check for air in the fuel system. Any air with an older injection pump can be a no start. If there's a spot to bleed air or a little hand pump that you can pump to prime it, try that. And then for what it's worth, yeah, check 12 volts at the pump and then crack an injector line loose at the injector. See if you have fuel spitting from that injector at the engine. Just be careful. Stand back. Make sure it's not spraying on you. You know.
Cover it with the rag and stuff like that. You'll know if it's squirting at you and stuff. What about glow plugs?
Glow plugs are also a possibility. Intake air heater. That's something else. But usually on those industrial motors, they're usually pretty good start without those anyway. So... that's a possibility, for sure.
Yeah. Are the glow plugs easily accessible? You could take a voltage reading and see if they're getting hot.
Should be. On that. Should
now,
be.
Could you use an ohmmeter to go from the tang of the glow plug to ground and see if a resistance?
Yes.
So if he went and did all four, and then he found one or two or three was out of spec, then that might be something. But if he'd had no inject or no glow plug activity... does it have a glow plug relay?
Has to.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, there could be a glow plug relay problem, too. Yeah.
So, you got quality of fuel, you got glow plugs, and you've got whether that high pressure pump has 12 volts.
Usually, if you introduce another fuel source, like propane.
Here's my order. I'm going to go 12 volt injector pump, confirm the 12 volts, easily done, and then I can check for air and prime it. Make sure, use a pump to make sure there's no air in the system. Then I'm going to open an injector line and attempt to start it and see if fuel spurts out. And then check for glow plugs. I'm not sure how to check for the glow plug again. I kind of missed the detail on how to test the glow plug.
Well, the glow plug, if it has glow plugs, it'll be sticking out near the injector and or somewhere where there's going to be a single wire going to it. So if you ohm that out to battery negative, it should be under 2 ohms typically for being good.
You're going to take the two wands of your digital volt ohmmeter, and you're going to go to the top of the glow plug and to ground. And you're going to have it set in ohms. And so Nate says 2. So if you have 30 or if you have 0, then there's a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Obviously the
so
basics, too. There will be some
got
resistance.
It.
Check basics also. Is the fuel filter plugged? Is the air filter plug solid? You know, construction equipment, definitely.
They're all well taken care of, Nate. I'm offended that you would suggest that a piece of construction would have a dirty air filter
things
or something
happen.
Like that.
Things
My
happen.
Goodness. And they're like cowboys, you know. They don't have any horse manure in the fuel tank because
no.
they used a 5-gallon tank for here and then they did here. That kind of stuff. They didn't ever happen.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, listen, thank you very much, Andy. Or Derek, thank you very much. And, you know, Dave, you stay there. Because I'm not going to be able to do you justice with about a minute and 10 seconds left until this break. We have four lines available, 602-508-0960, but Dave is still first. 602-508-0960, four lines available. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me. He's up at 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak Road. He's a real diesel guy. His fingernails are a tad dirty, and every once in a while, I can smell the odor of diesel, especially if he comes from work to radio. Just sometimes. It smells good to me, okay?
It smells good to me,
yeah.
too.
Gas smells good to me, too. So, what doesn't smell good to me is some diesel that's puking white smoke out the tailpipe.
Yes.
That
yes.
doesn't smell good.
No.
Do you even have to... Could I blindfold you and walk you up to the exhaust on a diesel? And would you know by your old snifferoni that
yes.
it was blowing white smoke as opposed to black?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The nose is a tool also.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's also a tool for your wife. And your mother. Did your mother ever grab your nose? Or did she grab your earlobes?
Earlobes.
Yeah, so did
yeah.
mine. That's
yeah.
the reason why. They called me Flappy for the first 10 years of my life because my mother had tugged on my ears so hard. Anyway, 602-508-0960. Gil is the one that answers the phone. He's a really nice guy. But if you use bad words, then he's going to put on my screen, he uses bad words. So don't use bad words, but Gil's the one that'll say hi, KKNT, and then he'll take your name and stuff like that. So we'll get to you as quickly as you can. But right now, Dave, I'm reminded, you're first. This is 960 KKNT. My name's Mark Salem, and every Saturday from 10 to noon, we're here talking about cars. We're not doing anything other than talking about cars. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to do just exactly what we said. We're going to go to Dave first. Dave, thank you for holding. What can I do for you?
Howdy, sir. Hey, that, how you doing?
Good, good.
All right, I want to make sure you're there. Hey, that hard shifting Chevy truck, you were talking to that guy?
Uh-huh.
We were heavy hauling with my 96 automatic transmission up the 6 Mile Hill, up to Cordis Lakes, up north.
Uh-huh.
And that darn truck, we put it to bed that night, and the next day it was slamming second gear and would not stop. And what ASE guy, friend of mine, pretty sharp, it wasn't throwing codes, it's an older one, but he decided that if we hooked the negative positive battery overnight or whatever length of time, that was his suggestion, it stopped doing it. He said it had got into heavy tow haul code mode, whatever. Any of that make sense to you? It did fix it.
You know, you're not going to argue. First of all, you're not going to argue with success. Second of all, I want you to close your eyes, and both of us are sitting there shaking our heads. Yes. Not no, but yes.
Especially
yeah,
on that year.
Yeah. And
yeah, I hear you.
It's kind of like you reboot your computer when it's acting up, and that fixes it. On a car, typically what I like to do is pull both cables. And when the cables are completely disconnected from the battery, touch them together and then let it sit for, you know, 15, 30
yeah,
minutes.
That's what we did, right.
Okay.
That's what we did.
And you're discharging the capacitors when you touch them together. There is no spark there. But sometimes I'm scared that they're going to touch the two cables with a jumper cable, and that's going to be a hell of a fireworks show when
yeah.
you do that.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I know.
But thank you for that. You're exactly right.
It instantly stopped it. I thought we had ruined that transmission. It was a 200,000-mile truck. She's still sturdy, old girl, but man,
yeah.
That transmission, like he said, it looked like you got rear-ended when it shifted. I've never been anything shifting that hard, so maybe he's still listening. I don't
okay.
suggest doing anything he doesn't know what to do, but
that's
it helped us.
That's no harm, no foul there. So it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Mike had his 07 Silverado, and the transmission, he was our first caller. So Dave to Mike, disconnect the battery and see what happens. Thank you, Dave, and thank you for waiting. Thank you very much. Ken, good morning.
Good morning. I've got a 91 Ford Ranger, with the V6 engine in it.
Okay.
I have an oil leak. The steering gear,
okay,
where the steering column inputs.
Okay.
I've taken that short drive shaft out of the way and peeled the rubber off of the top of the seal. And so I see a seal and a snap ring, but I can't find any gap in the snap ring with a pick.
Okay.
I'm feeling around there, and I don't know what I'm looking at.
There, so a lot of the snap rings don't have holes in them so that we can use snap ring pliers. Sometimes you're going to use a really small screwdriver. Have you taken some brake clean and cleaned that area up? Because sometimes the tips won't go all the way into the groove.
Okay, there's no tab with holes on them?
No.
It's clean, and I've used a sharp screwdriver and a pick.
Okay. Well, how many miles are on this?
94.
Okay. I don't know how, unless the whole cover comes off.
There is that too, yeah.
Yeah. Can you take the cover around that? It's called the input seal. And maybe there's three or four bolts around the cover, and you take the cover off, and then you punch the seal from outside in of this housing?
I'm not staring at it at the moment, but I don't think so.
Okay.
Can I drill that?
Here's the deal. You can do anything you want, because the worst case scenario is you got to buy another steering box. I was hoping you said that you had 200,000 miles on that Ford, but I know I'm dreaming, because Fords don't get that high. But I was hoping you said 250,000 miles on it. Say, come on, Ken, just go buy a steering box. But
we're still dealing with time here, though, and time is the enemy on that truck. So
you're right. Yeah. Where do you live, Ken?
Mesa,
1 minute.
Power, and Main area.
Just find a shop close by you, and don't go Monday mornings or Friday afternoons, but you just say, can I stop by and you look at my input shaft seal, and would you give me an estimate to replace it? Now, know that it's a 50-50 chance that will fix it, 50-50 chance it won't, because there's probably a groove in the input shaft, and the seal's not going to reseal on a groove. There's lots of bad things here. And either that or find some compressed air and blow that area off really good, because Nate and I, there is a snap ring. We think there's a snap ring there, but it's not going to have two eyes on it, so we can use some pointed pliers. The end is not square. The end has an ear on each side. And so that gives you the opportunity to get underneath that ear and lift that snap ring up, and then you can unroll the snap ring. We're pretty sure of that.
I do have a right angle pick, and I can't seem to get underneath anything.
Wait, it's not really get underneath anything. You're going to get to the little tab that hangs off the end, and you're just going to lift it up and pull the snap ring out. So you're going to kind of lift it up towards the shaft.
Oh.
But I think if you just stop by some shop and you say to them, would you be so kind as to tell me how to get that snap ring out? He's going to get some compressed air. He's going to blow it off. He's going to get a little carburetor cleaner. He's going to clean it up, and he goes right there. So you could do that yourself. Yeah. You know, another thing you could do is go to the auto parts store and have them pull a steering box out and look to see what kind of a snap ring holds that together.
Yeah.
So that might be a better deal, but Ken, that's the best we can do. Keith, you stay right there. We're going to pick you up right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel, Mark Salem, every Saturday, helping you out with your car problems. We're going to guess, but we're only as good as the information you give us. So if we say, is the exhaust white or black, and you say blue, it's going to be a little difficult. Or if you say it's pink, it's going to be a little difficult. But just it's the give and take helps us best take care of you.
Absolutely.
And we were just talking about automatic transmission exchange has been in Phoenix since 1968. Phil has been in transmission overhauls and repairs since the very first ones, which is the Power Glide, and the Buick, I think, had one before that, all the way to the new electronic control. So Phil's one of those guys that has been from the beginning to the end of transmissions. So he's in Phoenix, 40th Street in Washington, and so if you have a transmission problem, Phil says stop by and we'll talk about it. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Okay, we've got Keith, and Keith, what's up?
Mark and Nate, love the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a 2005 Kawasaki Mule that's a diesel.
Okay.
Three-cylinder. When I got it new to me, which was only about a year ago, I changed the oil and the fuel filter.
Okay.
Unbeknownst to me, there was two oil plugs on the pan. Everywhere on that thing it says, do not overfill with oil, which I couldn't understand why they were so pronounced about it. Now I know. I overfilled it with oil. Went to start it, and it hydraulic.
Okay.
A very hard start with a bang, and then it started, and it smoked ever since. Took it into a mechanic. He's got it apart. He's got a bent rod. What would cause it to hydraulic by changing the oil and or the fuel filter? Or overfilling the oil, I should say.
Go. Most likely, in my opinion, it brought oil past the rings and then put it on top of that cylinder. And then when the piston came back up again, it can't compress liquid, so that's where the rod bent. That's most likely, in my opinion, what happened.
There's also the remote possibility that we filled it full of fuel for some reason or another. But it's normally... Yep. I mean, when we fill it full of fuel, we don't usually have all the injectors fail. We don't usually have that, right?
Right.
Usually one injector goes bad. So I don't know. Here's the deal. It really makes no difference at this particular time. But if you overfilled it with oil, I agree with Nate. Almost, I'd say you have a 90% chance that somehow you pushed, that piston came down and the oil went past it. And then
it's got to go somewhere.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many quarts does that hold?
I believe it was something like 4.3 liters. Does that sound right? It was metric.
Okay. So
no metric.
All right. But that's 4.3 if you drain both pans.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So do you know what the split is by chance, Nate?
I don't.
Mule? I don't either.
Yeah.
But if it's 4.2, I would imagine there's 2.5 or something like that in one hump or one pan and 2.5 on the other.
You would think.
Do they split the pans like that because this vehicle is going to be off-road and they need to make sure they're sucking oil out of whether you're going down real steep or going up real steep?
Very possible.
Okay. That's kind of an old wife's tale that I was told a long time ago. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't, if he's going to be repairing it, there's, you know, the autopsy is not that important. It's you could spend a lot of time, and I don't think either one of us would know why that rod bent. Okay. But we do know you probably tried to compress a liquid.
It didn't work.
Yeah,
it never does.
You know, let me change your story just a little bit, okay? I told my wife to change the oil in my Mule. And she forgot to pull the other drain plug, and so I've since counseled her, and so I think we'll be successful next time. That's what I would do.
Oh boy.
That's right. So I hope none of my buddies are listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
No, we're not going to tell them that we're talking to Keith, who has a Dodge. No, it's no problem. So anyway, thanks for calling. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. Now, Gil, didn't we have somebody about the Eco Diesel?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a person who didn't want to go on the air.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We're going to do that real quick.
Yeah, wanted their opinion.
Okay, yeah, on the Eco Diesel. Now, the Dodge has a 3-liter Eco Diesel, and they've promoted it pretty heavy. It's a kind of a monster for a small.
In the half tons.
In the half tons,
yep.
Yeah. And that's kind of unusual. We don't usually get a diesel in a half tons. You got to go a 3/4 ton. On a grade scale of A through F, you've worked on them, and so have I. So give. What do you think the customer's, after a year of owning that thing, what do you think the customer's going to think that vehicle deserves from an A through an F?
In my world, B to a C.
Okay.
In my world.
Okay. In my world, a D. I mean, a D, and I'm on the edge of an F. What are you seeing?
What I'm seeing is you have to over-maintain that motor.
A lot,
yes.
There's no forgiveness on that thing.
No, there is no forgiveness.
Yeah, if it seems to know that if you're 100 miles past the oil change, it's going to, the air conditioning compressor is going to blow up on them.
Or the motor's going to lock up something. Yeah.
Now, I don't like the EcoDiesel, and you're right. We have a couple of fleets, so we're seeing vehicles with real high miles. And, of course, the EGR's burning the metal or the plastic intake. That creates a whole new problem. We've had some of our EcoDiesels do it twice because there is no repair for it yet. So you're having to replace the whole top of the motor.
Right.
And that's not something that's inexpensive. And so the concrete companies that we do a lot of their service work, they still like the fuel economy. They still like that they're gonna last a long time. It's just that they have some quirks, and in order for them to last a long time, you're gonna have to maintain the heck out of them, and you're gonna have to know the service manual by heart.
Yep, absolutely. And
on the other hand, the Dodge 6.7's forgiving. The Ford 6.7 is forgiving.
Overall,
the 6.6 is forgiving. Otherwise, you can stretch those out till there's a symptom, but the EcoDiesel, it goes from good to bad in a real short period of time.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. So, Peter, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. Well, I've not suffered from the coronavirus other than I actually had it and have the antibodies.
Oh.
I suffered no ill effects other than a headache.
Okay, well, Nate and I will trade you the answer to this question for, we'll meet you at the hospital and we'll take some of your antibodies. And, that's what they say.
Yeah.
As long as you don't tighten the multiples or aren't fittings, we'll be okay.
Okay, all right.
Now, other than that, I have a 2007 Hyundai Santa Fe GLS. And it's been a really decent car. It's had some work done on it, and mostly during the first 100,000 miles at the dealer. And then at a shop I like locally. And then it's got 178,000 on it. Recently, it's like when I first start driving at very low speed, I get a wobble. The car feels like it's wobbling. But then it doesn't do it after that at any other speed. It's just very low, like under about maybe 5 to 15 miles an hour. But it only does it when it starts. To move, not after it's like moving and I slow down and then start up again.
All right. Is the wobble feel in the butt, in your butt, the seat of your pants, or is it in the steering wheel?
It's not in the steering wheel. I kind of feel it in my feet.
Okay.
Does that sound weird?
No, not at all. That's part of the conversation. You got to ask those questions. The husbands will always stumble around and never answer it. The wives know exactly what I'm talking about. But here's the deal.
She likes it. She thinks the car likes her.
I can't fix that. I'm a car mechanic. I'm not a psychiatrist. But Nate and I are going to agree that there's probably something loose in that rear suspension, or you have a bad tire back there.
Okay.
And Nate, I'm thinking out loud. If we had an air leak and we had a tread separation, then at night it would probably get some air depending on the size of the leak, and then after he drives it for a while, maybe instead of the tire ending up with a flat spot, ultimately it smooths out.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, this is not going to be a hard diagnosis. I'll tell you how you can diagnose it. How long has this been happening?
It's been going now for about 2 months.
Okay. I think that if you go back to the two rear tires, I think, let's pretend 360 degrees, okay? If you look at the side, from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock has obvious tread wear that none of the rest of the tire has. So the tread is a little slimmer, a little closer to the wear bars than from 3 o'clock all the way around to 6 o'clock in a counterclockwise direction. And if you find that, then you can go to any tire store, I'd go to discount, and say to them, "Will you look at my back tires and tell me if you see any unusual wear?" And if they come out and say, "Yeah, that right rear, the left rear has some unusual wear," then we knocked it. We got it.
Wow. Now, right before all that started happening, I did have a tire puncture, and it was repaired.
Okay. Was it done with a plug or a patch on the inside?
You know, I don't know.
Okay. Well, when you, the tire's made up of multiple layers, and when you plug it, then you leave the air in between the layers, and you've glued the plug to every single layer. From a patch point of view, you patch it from the inside so any air between the layers can go out the hole that the nail was in. But we're not going to look in that direction. You've given us great symptoms. You got the wobble in the back end that goes away. I'm 75 to 80% sure you have a tread separation on one of those rear tires. Now, if you had your wife ride in the back and she sat on the passenger side and then she moved to the driver's side, she could tell. Well, if you did, if you sat in the back seat too, whoever's sitting in the back seat can tell you which side it's on.
Okay.
All right. And if you can't get your wife to go that early in the morning, get your girlfriend. Okay.
So they'll charge me diagnostic time.
All right. Thanks for laughing. Thanks for laughing. All righty. David, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. I have a noise in a F-350 Super Duty. Makes a whistle at idle.
Oh, that's free of charge.
Whistle at idle.
Yeah. What do you? I mean, I'm thinking of something. What are you thinking?
Well, which engine do you have, sir?
It's the big one.
Gas or diesel?
It's whatever. Diesel, of course.
Okay.
Diesel. Okay.
What year is it?
2013.
Okay.
Oh.
He must have hit his head before he bought that. Okay. Nate, go.
I missed the last part. What did he say? 2013.
2013 F-350. He has a whistle or a noise. I'm going to ask him. I'm pretty sure it's first thing in the morning. Is that right, David?
Nope. No matter when you drive it.
Okay. So 100% of the time it's got a whistle in it.
Exhaust manifold leaking on those could cause a whistle for sure. Boost leak of some kind.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's either in the exhaust system or it's in the boost system from the turbocharger to the air intake.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how you can find it. Does it do it when you're just idling?
Right.
Okay. Go down to the auto parts store and buy a big piece of 4 foot, 3/4 inch heater hose.
You could have a belt too for that matter, but.
Yeah. Well, if it's a belt, if you sprayed it with water, it'd go away.
Yes.
Okay. So you could check that. Spray the belt with water. Or spray the belts when it's running, and if the noise is still there, then it's not the belt. But if you take that big piece of heater hose and you put one of it into your ear, and then you start waving it around the engine compartment, I promise you, you'll know where the leak's coming.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, I took it in the shop last summer, and they said it was like $2,500 to fix it, and I said, no, I don't want to do it. I asked him if it would strand the truck somewhere, and he said, nope. So I said, okay. So we've had it like that for the last 10 months, probably.
Yeah. We're both shaking our heads because we don't, and we're thinking out loud.
Yeah.
On the pressure side is the boost, and that's where shoving air into the entry part of the motor. The exhaust side is going out. So it could be for either one of those two.
Exhaust is kind of under pressure, too, with the manifolds and uppipes and so forth. If you have a bad bellows, expandable part of the pipe that is leaking, that could be part of it. Exhaust manifold leak.
Okay, if he were to take it to your shop, you would say to him, diagnostic time is going to be somewhere between this and this, and I'm going to be able to tell you exactly what it is, and I'm going to be able to give you an estimate at the same time.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Put the fill in the numbers. It's $3 to $1 to 15?
75 to 150, I'll give him a diagnostic on it, and we'll give him a quote and go from there.
Okay.
So.
See, it's a matter of there's a lot of places to go fix, not fix, but identify.
Yeah.
So it's not something, I made it sound really easy by putting a hose to your ear, but in reality, you're going to get in a general direction and you're going to hear it, but you still have to find the specific area that it's coming from. So anyway, thanks very much, David. Good luck to you. Well, welcome back, everybody. Ooh, boy, it's 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Nate from Strictly Diesel. He's up at 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak Road. He's a real diesel guy. I mean, a real diesel guy. He's not one that pretends he knows about diesels. Okay, and we got two callers, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I have a question for you, and I already know the answer as far as I'm concerned. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Somebody comes in and you quote him 75 to 150, diagnose the problem. Okay, I know and you know that most of us go above and beyond.
Absolutely.
Because if it's if we bill in an hour 30 and it gets to an hour 57, then we're going to stick to an hour, whatever it is. So what happens at the end? You haven't got there yet.
Typically, we'll ask the customer for more if that's the case. For electrical diagnostics, that's a $300 charge period, just if it's a weird electrical problem. But again, we're going above and beyond before we even make that phone call to ask for more and or say, hey, we need to figure this out a little bit better.
So what happens if he says, no, I want to talk to the guy on the internet, and I want to take it home, so then what do you do?
At that point, it's usually a no charge because neither one of us have gotten anywhere. I haven't succeeded. Okay. You know, it happens. And at that point, I feel better by not charging, and you know, at that point, the customer goes. So.
But I think the message there is that we're going to get there.
Yes.
We're going to get there.
We're going to do our darndest, too.
Yeah.
And we go above and beyond to do that.
And
so.
Sometimes when you get to the point where, you know, every time you hit the brake pedal, the radio station changes. And when you get to the point, it's kind of like sometimes, and a lot of times for me, it's cost $137.50 to get there and $2 to fix it.
Right.
And that happens 30 to 50% of the time. Once you get close, you fix it.
Yep.
So
yep.
It's a difficult thing, but I like, and we do the same thing. If we can't diagnose it, it's kind of an uncomfortable situation. We haven't given you anything. We're not happy that you pulled a car out, but fair is fair.
Yep.
All right, let's go to the phone. Oh, lines are open, 602-508-0960, but Wayne and Kevin are standing by. Wayne, you're first.
Have a 2011 Dodge Grand Caravan, 3.6 liter variable valve timing. And first thing in the morning, first start, driving out of the driveway, has a rough shift from first to second gear. It shudders. Now, a little history on the vehicle. It was set for about the last 3.5 years before I bought it. It only has 45,000 miles on it. I've put about 4,000 of those miles on it, and it has improved to where it doesn't always do this the first shift of the day, and I back into my driveway, so I pull out every morning, and it is at 10 miles an hour shifts from first to second, and it shudders when it does that, but it only does it part-time now after having put 4,000 miles on it.
Okay. I'd like to see you manually shift it and see what happens. So pull it down into first and manually shift first, second, third, see what happens. I think the good news is it's getting better. A lot of times what happens is we end up with dry seals, especially you said the car had been sitting 3 or 4 years. And so if that's the case, and then you say when it warms up it's much better, and that follows with we have a pressure leak in the transmission that's going to be better after we warm up the fluid and warm up the seal. So do you like transmission additives, Nate?
I think they serve a purpose, yeah.
This would be something that I'd probably try some kind of an additive, something that rejuvenates the seals and stuff. I like to use brake fluid.
Got to be careful with that,
But I'm not saying a gallon.
Yeah, no.
I'm saying a third of a pint. But it's a hydraulic fluid.
Yeah.
It does rejuvenate rubber to some extent.
It does.
And I don't know what the negative would be. It's not going to clean the transmission spotless.
No.
It's really a diagnostic tool more than anything else. We've tried it in power steering leaks that are minor and brake fluid. Now, we're talking a tablespoon or two in a power steering system.
Right.
But in this transmission, a third of a pint. I don't know. How much is a pint? 16 ounces?
I'd have to ask Google.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we can't ask Google right now, but I think it's 16 ounces.
Yeah.
Or is that a quart?
That's a quart, 16
okay.
ounces.
All right. So it's 16. It's 8. So maybe 2 or 3 ounces of a pint bottle.
I can see that.
And this is .3 or .4, not the synthetic, which is .5. You have nothing to lose by trying that and seeing what happens. But I think the good news is it's getting better, and you're also coming out of winter and going into summer, and I think my bet is it'll clear up by the end of the summer. I think that you'll be fine at the end of the summer. And if not, find the kid that mows grass in your neighborhood, the 16-year-old, and just have him drive it hard for a couple days and see if he can help you. But that's what I would do. This is not something I'd spend any money on. especially for two things. Number one, you said it's getting better, and number two, you said it had been sitting for a long time. So I think we just need to take the horse out of the barn and go exercise it. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Kevin, you're up first or next. How can I help you?
Yeah, hello, Mark. Good day. I love your show. I followed you once before, and you helped me fix it, so I just want to mention that, and I appreciate all that, too.
Okay.
I've got a 99 F-350 7.3-liter engine. I only got 160,000 on it now, it's my second diesel. My question is you got another diesel guy on there, is there some way I can increase the horsepower carefully? Not radically, but enough. I got a bigger fifth wheel now than I had before, and okay. Is there some way I can do that without, I don't want to hurt the engine, I don't want to do anything extreme.
Okay.
But I'd just like to have a little more horsepower there.
Okay. Know? Well, first of all, I think the most important question for Nate and I is do you want to sell that?
You asked me the same question last time I called it. There's a little different way you said, if you want to sell it, let me know.
Yeah. Well,
that's my second one. I'm going to keep this one. I'm 72, and this one probably outlived me, so it's great. I love them. Last one I got, I was pushing about 430,000, and it was still getting over 17 miles per gallon,
Okay.
It was running great.
The reason why I say that, and Nate and I are laughing, is because the guys with 7.3s are getting almost as much as they paid for them. And and what's the year spread, Nate, in the 7.3? What is it?
It's 94.5 to 03.
Okay, so 94.5 and 03, we're talking 17-year-old trucks. And so if they paid $41,000 for it, sometimes they'll get that. And if you have a 7.3, has it ever happened to you coming out of the grocery store or something where there's a note on your windshield that says if you want to sell your truck? Okay,
yeah.
See? Yep. See, the demand is huge.
I've got to hide them off at Home Depot. Get to Home Depot. I don't know whether they want the tools in the back of my truck or they want my truck, and they usually, they're looking for another truck. They've had one, they got rid of it, and they're looking to get another one back again,
Tell me about the 7.3. Why is that such a wanted truck? Why is that?
They were bulletproof. I tell you what.
They're monsters.
They are monsters, for sure, and they just go. Overall, they go forever,
And then you step up from the 7.3 to the 6-liter, and we went from a virtual perfect motor on the 7.3 to the biggest piece of horse manure that has ever followed anything like the 7.3.
It's a shame, yeah.
But you're agreeing.
I'm trying not to, but
all right, let me ask you this. If you take a snapshot of 6 months at your shop, okay, how many 6-liters do you have compared to all the other diesels?
I said varies month to month.
Okay,
very.
Fair enough, but I want the big picture.
Yeah.
Do they dominate some of the, not oil changes, I'm talking about repairs.
Currently they are dominating,
6 liters are the biggest piece of crap there ever was. And you can't say it, but I'm going to say it. But on your 7.3, 160,000 miles, I mean, that's a baby.
There's plenty of potential with that truck. I would say give us a call. We can talk about your question. There's some nuances nowadays that you may or may not know about, but first and foremost, I would want to look at the truck just to make sure it's good for what you want to do as far as bumping it a little bit.
And they go between Rapid Roy the race car boy, and we're going to call that a 5, and all the way down to a 1, and you can kind of pick, Nate, what number do we get kind of risky on?
Oh, 3 and 4 for sure.
Bingo. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
3 and 4, but it doesn't sound like that Kevin's going to be on Central Avenue on Friday night.
No.
And we can't go to the 4 or 5 if you're going to be hauling stuff. That makes a big difference.
Right.
So to call Nate, Strictly Diesel, and he'll walk you through that. Now, to just clear this up, we've put a whole bunch of work in my Dodge. And when the light turns green, I can actually get the front wheels off the ground and drag the tailgate. Of course I'm exaggerating.
Yes.
But there is a difference when you do go to 4 or 5.
Absolutely.
There's a monster difference.
Monster difference,
But you also run the risk of being stupid and getting the exhaust gas temperatures way up there in the 15 to 18 range, melting some stuff.
Right.
So you have to know the limitations. But if you just want to go from traffic light to traffic light, or if you want to...
He's towing.
2 minutes.
So.
Yeah. That can happen. But you're not going to sacrifice. You're not going to get better fuel economy. That's never going to happen. And there's a risk associated with being stupid.
Absolutely.
So, okay, Keith or Kevin, call him, and he'll walk you through that. And, of course, he's going to hand you a business card. Or, hey, you know what? You got to put one on his windshield when you deliver his truck. Yeah. It'll make him feel normal.
Right, yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
He said he just wanted the engine. He said and he would have given me the same price. He said, I just need the engine. I was up in Prescott, and I said, I just get some tires changed on the trailer. And I told the guy, I haven't changed my tires. This guy's serious. And literally, he wanted the engine. He just that hounded me and hounded me. He had a 6.0, and he was disgusted.
Okay. Now, hold on. Yeah. You have a 7.3, Nate.
Yes.
Okay. Give me an idea of what you see people pay for a 7.3 in good shape.
1 minute.
Depends on the year, but anywhere between $10,000 and $20,000.
Okay. Yeah. And so I suggest, Kevin, that you take their business card and you just say, well, make me a cash offer and I'll get back with you. And then, at the appropriate time, you can call one of those guys and say, hey, I'd like to take you up on your 20 offer.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Go fishing. All righty. Thank you, Kevin. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have five. And we can talk about everything except marital problems and hunting. Okay?
Okay.
Is that all right?
That's fine.
Have you got anything else you don't want to talk about?
I'm blank at the moment.
There's a lot of things
lot.
That we can't talk about.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. If you got a car problem, a truck problem, you want to talk about oil, you want to talk about gas, what the difference is, all those kinds of questions, we're pretty well versed on giving you an answer. And you can decide for yourself if it's valid or not. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is Nate from Strictly Diesel, 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak Road. Before I was so rudely interrupted by Gil, the engineer, my mother said from a very early age, she said, Mark, if bull was snow, you'd be a walking blizzard. And since then, to my brothers, they've always called me Blizzard. That's the way it's been. It's just all my life I've been called Blizzard.
Yeah.
I don't know if they really meant it, but I am pretty good with cars. All right? I don't give marital advice, but I'm pretty good with cars.
Absolutely.
Jane, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Well, I have a problem that has been getting worse in my car with my ignition switch.
Okay.
I have a Prius 2014, and I would like to take it to a dealer other than the Toyota dealer downtown who can fix the problem is when I put the key in and I turn it on, it doesn't catch. And it's one of those that has runs on gas or an eco battery. It's a dual type car.
Okay.
So I need a dealer here in I live in North Scottsdale. I need a dealer farther up here.
Okay. Well, what you want is a repair shop, or do you want us to refer you to a Prius dealer?
No, I would want a repair shop.
Okay.
I want somebody that's good with electrical systems in a car.
Okay, but
with my steering column.
All right. Let me back up just a minute. Do you have a key fob, and then once you get into the car?
No, I have a real key.
Okay, so you stick the real key in, and you go to the crank position?
Yeah, I turn it on.
And when you go to the crank position, does the motor crank over or not?
No.
Okay.
Usually what happens is the word ready appears on the screen.
Okay.
And that means the motor's running, I assume. Since it's so quiet, it's on the battery.
Okay. Can you flip that before you put your key in? Can you pick battery or engine?
No.
Okay.
It does it automatically.
All right. I don't know where to send you, but I'll tell you where I think you should go is go to Blackwell's at 40th and Greenway.
Okay.
And here's what you do with Tom. You have to challenge Tom. You have to say, I've had this everywhere imaginable, and nobody can fix this. I can demonstrate this to you, but there's just nobody that can fix it, and I'm just on the verge of 5 gallons of gas and a road flare in the back seat. And so I've looked at you, and there's a couple of reviews that are good and a couple that are bad, but I thought I'd try you. And that's waving the red flag in front of the bull. All I want you to do is tell him the symptoms. Don't you mention ignition switch, because you don't want to send him in that direction. You want him to take step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I would say go to Tom Blackwell and do your best to... I've been told nobody can fix this. Nobody can fix this. And but I live around the corner. I live close by, and I thought I'd stop and ask you if you want to take a stab at it.
Okay.
He'll take that bait like a trout he'll grab that hook and put it in his mouth and shake his head and then I think you'll be good there. He'll treat you fair. I promise you that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, ma'am. Bill, you're up next.
Good morning, Mark and Nate. I've got a 97 F-250, 7.3 diesel that I love. It's great. If it gets below about 50 degrees in the morning, that puppy isn't going to start. Plug it in for 20 minutes, and it starts right up.
Nate already shaking his head, so he already knows. Go ahead. Tell him what's the matter.
Any other symptoms with it? And good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
Just
any other symptoms?
Yeah.
No, it runs great. It's got 300,000 miles on it.
300.
It runs great.
Okay. Do you notice it blowing? Do you notice it blowing white smoke when it's doing this at all?
When it's not starting, it puffs a little bit of smoke. I wouldn't say it's white.
I like gray.
Grayish, yeah.
Grayish white. Okay. Typically, you have a glow plug relay issue. And I tell you what, on that body style, it's very easy to tell. If you turn your key on and watch the voltmeter on your dash, or the battery gauge, if you will, you should see it go to normal reading and then go negative once you turn the key on. Because once it goes negative, that tells you that the glow plug relay is latched and that it's sending voltage to the glow plugs.
And we need lots of power to the glow plugs to get those to get hot. So that's what he's talking about.
Yes, yes. Now, if you turn your key on and you don't see that voltmeter move, it just, with the key on, it just goes to middle and sits there. Your glow plug relay is not working. With that being said, glow plug relay is one of the very big options there. Could have glow plugs that are just plain worn out, high resistance values, need to be replaced. That particular body style has connectors that tend to melt or fatigue, which can cause some issues. So overall, there's some few areas there, but definitely glow plug relay is where I would start your diagnosis and watch that voltmeter.
Okay.
And here's how you do it Mark Salem's way. You get the wife in the truck and you explain exactly what you want her to do. So she turns the key on, not to start, and the needle's, you know, in the middle. And then she goes, starts it up, and the needle doesn't move. So you get on the internet and find out what a glow plug relay looks like, and you take the wooden handle of a hammer and just gently touch that relay. If all of a sudden the needle drops down, then you owe Nate $100.
And that's a true statement there too, because for what it's worth, I've had popping the hood cause that relay to latch. So just a jar in a truck of some kind causes the relay to latch.
That's another $50.
Yeah.
Get your wife to crank on it and lift the hood and just slam the hell out of it. If it starts, then you're done. That's how we do it.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, we slam it hard.
There
I mean,
go.
Sometimes then people next door go,
I have one other question.
Okay, sure.
It's not diesel necessarily, but on that same truck, I just had the brakes done, and I had them rotate the tires while I did the brakes. And I left the shop, and I hit a bump, and the whole front end started shaking all over the place. And I went back, and he said, oh, yeah, I was afraid of that. He said, we'll put the tires back the way they were. And he did, and he drove it, and it was fine. And I drove it, and it's fine. So something about – something's obviously wrong with the front end cutting the tires to do something.
Okay. Well, it's either going to front end or tires, and what I would have done was just rotate the left side. Let's find out which tire is causing the problem. So rotate left rear to right rear, or left rear to left rear, and just do one side at a time. And I feel pretty comfortable that you've got a tire problem. it's not going to be a front end problem, because you know it's a front end problem if you're you have abnormal wear on the front ends. Now, on your Ford, we're going to wear the outside edge of both front tires a little bit more than the rest of the tire. So in that case, that's what I do. But anyway, I got to run real quick, and we'll you can add to it, but I've got to get on this break. And Lloyd and Larry, you stay right there, because you're number one and number two, and we have other lines available, 602-508-0960. So, Bill, we're going to let Nate comment on it, but it takes him a while to gather his thoughts and stuff like that. And Mark only has 20 seconds before the break, and if I don't hit the break, then Gil uses bad words to me, which ruins my whole day and makes my wife mad, because she says, you missed your 30 break. And I said, I know, honey. She says, well, why don't you stop missing your break so that Gil doesn't get mad at you? So Gil's the engineer, and I'm really afraid of him, and I'm going to continue to talk right through the break.
Which you almost did.
I know. I would. That's why I said I'm going to talk through the break to tell you to take me at 30. Okay, 34 minutes after 11 o'clock. I got Gil to use bad words. I got him to use bad words.
Yeah.
Okay, real quick, let me tell you about a great shop, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I've talked about them before. Between Bob and his son-in-law, Jeremy, they are really good at what they do. You can count, you can bet your last dollar they're going to treat you fairly and honestly. And the reason they do is because Ellen's at the front counter, and Ellen runs the show. So no matter what Bob and Jeremy tell you, they dance to the music that Ellen does. So that's Larry Harker's Automotive. They've been around since 1967, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Let's go to the phones. And Lloyd, how can we help you?
Yes, morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, Lloyd, hold on just one second for me. Please, hold on. You had a question for the vibration guy real quick. I needed to go to that first.
Oh, yeah. We were talking off air, but on the tire vibration that happened after they rotated the tires, on a truck, always look for the tire that has the most wheel weight. That's going to want to go farthest away from the driver. So the fact that those tires got rotated tells me that there was a lot of weight on those. They might have been a little bit out of balance, and that's where the shake came from when they were on the front. So the fact that they have now been rotated to the back of the truck, that's a lot easier to take care of that vibration. And probably want to look into getting those tires balanced sooner or later. So.
Well, and there's a lot more weight in the front of the truck,
yes,
than in the back of the truck.
It becomes more sensitive.
Exactly.
For sure. Yep.
Exactly. And then one last thing is you're going to have to know whether the vibration increases with speed. So from 0 to 20, I don't have it. And then from 20 to 70 miles an hour, of course, we know Fords don't go that fast, but 70 miles an hour, it gets progressively worse.
Yeah.
That helps us out.
Yep.
I'm sorry, Lloyd. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a 1991 Ford Fleetwood Bounder RV, and I'm looking at purchasing a Jasper transmission. And I'm getting, they're offering me a 3-year, 100,000-mile warranty. I purchased one before, not from Jasper, but from another transmission company. And it was a 2-year transmission with a 24 in it. Lost the reverse gear at just as it was expiring, the warranty. So I figured I'd go on to a 3-year. Can you give me some idea on the Jasper transmission? Are they any good? Or
well, let me change your thing. First of all, I have a 93 or 94 Bounder, so I have the Ford chassis on mine. Mark, what do you sell? And the answer is Jasper. Mark, is there some guys in town here that will do as good a job or better? Yes, there is. Are they retail guys? No, they're not. They're wholesale guys. So if you can get somebody to let you use their transmission overhaul facility, there's two of them in the valley. There's one north and one south. You know who I'm talking about up north, Alger.
Yeah,
and Nate could middle the deal. Normally, we don't add anything to it because there's no big deal. But Alger just doesn't want to deal with customers. He wants to do work for shops. So the shop test drives it, verifies the concern, and we go from there. But most of the guys here in town are not. Well, I don't know if anybody that's going to give you the warranty that Jasper is going to give you, 3 years. But the question is, does that cover labor as well? Does it cover towing? Does it cover you breaking down, 100 miles outside of Albuquerque? So those are the questions you need to ask.
And overall, too, Jasper, we do install their product. Overall, their transmissions have been good for us. Haven't had to worry about their warranty overall. We match the warranty with the 336 also, so, yeah.
You're covered.
You're covered, and there's plenty of Jasper places around the country, depending on where you're at, that will take care of you also. So, overall,
right.
Decent.
And so, I give Jasper an A.
Yeah.
For quality.
Yeah.
Now, it's not, I'm sure, over the last 10 years, I remember we had a 390 motor that was drinking oil, and they had sleeved one of the cylinders, and it was oblong, and they paid the whole thing on that, and we were very grateful.
Yeah.
But initially it looked like us,
yeah.
And I can understand that. But after we sent it back to them, they said, "We're raising our hand. This had nothing to do with you. We screwed up." So we like them, and we do sell their products a lot.
We do sell.
If that's the situation on your bounder, then I want to put you in a comfort zone that would be a good idea. Thank you, Lloyd. Thank you very much. Larry, you're up next.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I had a 2005 diesel. Loved it, by the way. I heard you guys talking about the older ones, Chevy. And traded, and I had a problem with it overheating, so I traded it for a 2015. And I love it.
1 minute.
It's a great truck. The issue I'm having with it is I pull a 36-foot fifth wheel. I also pull either boat or ATVs behind the fifth wheel. And when I'm going downhill like Camp Verde Hill, my brakes are shimmying.
Okay. What kind of truck is it?
It's a Chevy.
Okay. The Duramax.
Duramax, yep.
You need, somebody needs to check the wheel bearings. Somebody needs to check the rotor run out. And last but not least, if you have rear discs, then a lot of times they fall out of adjustment, which overloads the front brakes.
He's rear disc on that though. So
he's got rear disc.
He's got rear disc.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you adjust the rear disc? How do you adjust the rear disc?
Well, I was going to say, I double-check trailer brakes, make sure they're working.
Okay.
Use the tow haul function on the trans, because that will save the brakes.
Trailer brakes are working.
Okay.
And the shimmy seems to be coming from the front.
Okay. Well,
they've gotten hot at one point or the other, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just really a matter of diagnosing it. I think the rear brakes adjust with the parking brake. And as you pull the lever, it ratchets the piston out, I think. So if that's the case, the question is, how many times do you use the parking brake? Truthfully. Never.
I hardly ever use the parking brake.
All right. Try it my way. You got nothing to lose. Every time you get in the truck, you start it up, put it in drive, take your foot off the brake so you're in park. And then I want you to apply the parking brake 5, 6, 7 times and just do that for a while and see if all of a sudden you feel a difference in brakes. But one way or another, you got a brake rotor wobble, so it's either wheel bearings or you got the rotors hot. And so we could machine the rotors and fix the wobble, but it's probably a good idea to look at the cause. So
okay, if it only has 60,000 miles on it, you think the rotor's going to go by then?
Well, I don't have any idea. I've got construction guys that'll go through pads in 30,000 miles. And so I've got guys that
I've had the patch check, and they're not even close to being worn.
Well, you're missing the point. The point is we're it's more likely than not that you've overheated the front brakes. And so the question is why? And are you using tow haul mode like you should? Or is the trailer brakes working or not working and overloading the front brakes on your truck? So it has nothing to do with the quality of the pads or anything like that. It has to do with heat.
Yeah.
That's the only time you do that. But I got to run. Thank you very much, Larry Leonard. You stay right there. We'll be back. Buttons here in just a second and make sure that we've got everybody.
There we go.
Yeah, I push a whole bunch off and then I got to remember where I'm at. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a good guy. Tom has a full-service, family-owned operation that served the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. Whatever your repair needs might be, Tom would be a good guy. He's on I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. He has ASE-certified technicians, and Tom knows right from wrong. So he knows when a technician's telling him the truth, like most of us do. And so we've been around the block, and so you're not going to really tell us something that we know isn't true, or we're going to ask you to prove it, or we're going to go drive the car ourselves. That's the way it is everywhere, but Tom's a good guy. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, then Tom would be a great place to start if you don't already have a shop. Leonard, you're up. How can we help you?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 96 one-ton 7.3 turbo, and it started to jerk at high rates of speed on the freeway. Driving around town, I'm fine, but when I get on the freeway and start cruising at higher speeds, 65, 70 up, it starts to jerk.
How many miles on it?
103.
Okay. Any check engine lights or trans light flashing at you? Or?
No, none.
Okay.
Is any smoke? Black, blue, white?
No smoke whatsoever.
Okay.
There could be a number of things, unfortunately. It's not just one thing that I could tell you to go look at, but cam sensors was a recall for a while, and I know those are known to cause this type of sensation. There is a IPR valve. I'm sorry.
I just recently had a cam sensor. It was cutting out driving in town when I came to a stop. I had a cam sensor put on it.
Okay.
And now it started this jerking at high, like I said, at high speed.
Do you know what brand of cam sensor they used?
No, not right offhand.
Okay. Because believe it or not, to this day, I still recommend the Ford one. I know there's plenty of aftermarkets now in that game, but the Ford sensor is overall the most reliable. So if this happened after the fact, you may want to ask or figure out what brand is in there.
On the cam sensor, I'm betting it has to be from Ford. I don't know that any of the aftermarket ignition companies would have a cam sensor. After all, it's not like an A number.
Well,
but I'm guessing.
The cam sensor used to be over $200, and they're down to like $35 now. So it's
okay.
The technology has improved on them, and people have picked up on that. So I know there's other choices.
Fair enough. I agree.
Yeah, there's an IPR valve that could be causing this. Believe it or not, a bad battery ground. One way or the other could cause this. Torque converter on the trans.
Okay, now you can manually shift the trans to see if the torque converter's part of it.
Yeah.
You can also turn on your headlights at night. If you got a bad ground, your headlights will not maintain the same intensity. So those are two things that you can look at. What's the IPR?
IPR is the valve that's on the high-pressure pump that creates the high-pressure oil for the injectors to work. So that particular valve is controlled by the computer, and depending on if it's acting up or not, could cause a skip or a jump. And believe it or not, your computer could be part of the problem, too, here. I've seen those start acting weird at this kind of mileage, so and time being as old as the truck is at this point. So
you get a PCM from Ford. You have to reprogram it to tell it what car you're putting it in or what truck you're putting it in, or do they come pre-programmed by year?
These come programmed, yeah.
Okay, so you just buy by the year.
Yeah.
Okay, 7.3 by the year, and you it's plug and play.
Yep.
Okay, we've not done a bunch of 7.3 work. We like the heck out of them.
We do, too.
And
they're a baby.
Well, and not only that, you're a hero. You know, you're a goat when you give them the bad news about their 6-liter, but you're a hero otherwise.
I don't know if you're close to the shop or not, but we'd love to drive it with you and see if we can figure something out. So,
and that's strictly diesel, 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak Road. Okay, I'm going to tell you now about another good shop. That's Auto Dynamics in Sun City, been around since 1982. They've got some really good people that work there, good technicians, good managers, good supervisors. They're not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill, so they get paid hourly with overtime. So they're not motivated to sell you unnecessary parts or repair. So the only shop I can recommend in Sun City is Auto Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Gil, do we have anybody in the wings?
Nope, phone lines are open.
Okay. I think one of the things that we had on the show today was the ignition switch on the Prius.
Yeah.
It's really important to talk symptoms. It's really not good to say this is what my brother in Kentucky said it might have. You don't want to send us in the wrong direction.
Right.
And so it's really important. And then there's three answers to every question. Yes, no, or I don't know. And that's important as well. The worst part for me is the wife comes in and the husband's told her what to say, and she doesn't know anything about the symptoms.
Yeah.
And so the husband says, have them replace or check the front brakes because of this brake wobble we were talking about. Have them check the front brakes, Bob, and we don't know it hauls a trailer. We don't know it has a boat. We don't know it hauls quads. Now, we can look at the hitch, but that doesn't always tell you what you need.
Right.
So a lot of times it's really, ladies, we understand that husbands put you in that position. But sometimes we just need your husband's phone number so we can call him if he's the predominant driver and stuff like that. It really has to do with symptoms.
Yep.
If you give us enough information, oftentimes that saves you a whole lot of money. But what's not important is what the car doctor on Google said or the guy that does, you know, all the stuff on the internet and tells people how to fix their cars, because they can't be any better than we are, and we get to talk to you. And we get to ask you questions that are pertinent to the whole issue. So
state the facts, just the facts.
Yeah, yeah. Just answer the question. A couple of good examples is vibrations. Is it in the steering wheel or your seat or your pants? People don't understand how important that is.
That's huge.
It's everything.
It is
it's,
for sure.
To find out, and then the terminology. It just won't start. Well. It won't crank over. It won't go rrr, 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 or it cranks over, rrr, 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 but it doesn't catch. There's a big difference on where we go.
Yep.
Big, big difference.
Yep.
So if it goes, you hit the key and then nothing happens, that's a no crank situation. My car has a no crank situation. Then the question is morning, noon, night, Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays? We're going to ask you a lot of questions and you're going to say, it's only cold in the morning. Okay, we're home free.
Yeah.
Leave it overnight, and we're going to see what the voltages are at the battery, at the starter. We're going to make sure that the shifter is closing the circuit so that it'll crank over and park in neutral, all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where you're going to save money. I promise you, if you come in with a good list of symptoms, and it'll save you money on the diagnosis.
Absolutely.
Blue smoke, black smoke, white smoke. That's important.
Yeah.
Speaking of white smoke and a diesel, I have a boom lift with a little four-cylinder Kubota, and it has two solenoids on it. One opens the pump. It's got a lever on the pump, and so when you hit the key, it opens up. The other one's a high idle. I cross-wired them.
Uh-oh.
And I just forgot. I didn't do a good job. So it wouldn't start. But it would run okay on ether for a little while.
Right.
But, and so I kept looking at the high idle solenoid, and I kept saying, why is that always? Maybe I should disconnect that, because it's, as soon as you hit the start, it goes to wide open throttle, or not wide open, but high idle.
Right.
And it didn't used to do that. There's a lever there for high idle, low idle. So, I'm proud to tell you that Renee reminded me that I had switched those two. And she says, and the reason I know that is because one of the new boot was over here and the old boot was up here because it has a bellow boot on it.
Good for her.
And I said to her, well, then you replace it. And I walked away. Now, my wife doesn't work on cars because she has pretty fingernails. But what do you think about mine?
Yeah, same as mine. Yeah.
So everybody makes mistakes. I'm going to admit to that one.
Absolutely.
I'm going to admit to that one.
Me too.
So it's a 30... It's a 30 or it's it, the standing height of it when you're all the way up to the top is 40 feet.
Oh, wow.
So my grandkids love to go all the way up, and then I shake the bucket. What they don't understand is it's tough on me because I don't like heights.
Yeah.
So you get up there with all the grandkids in there. Yeah, do it, Papa, do it. So you start shaking the bucket. I just want to jump off.
Right.
I mean, I'm scared to death.
Oh, man.
So it's I was using a boom lift because I'm having my barn painted. And so I was using the boom lift to go around the barn and pressure wash it. So I wasn't paying attention to the arm. So as I dropped down the bucket to go have lunch, I crushed the pipe, the rail fence.
Oh, no.
So nobody knows about it because I went and got the forklift and
straightened it up.
Yeah. With some exceptions, you don't know that I crushed it. So the problem is in my defense, when you're in a boom lift, you've got to watch all the corners. So if you swing the boom 180 degrees, you better hope the tail end is going to clear the wall or the fence.
Yep. Yep.
So it's got all these idiosyncrasies that, and I was mad at Renee because the reason I broke the fence was because Renee wasn't there. She's my spotter.
There you go.
You know, so she was probably shopping or something like that, but if she would have been there, I wouldn't have bent the fence. But she
makes
doesn't.
Sense.
She doesn't know I bent the fence because I haven't fixed it. So we have problems with technicians. We've got problems with new guys that misrepresent their skills. We have technicians that sometimes will tell us they've done a test and they really haven't. But by and large, it doesn't take us long to know that. You're shaking your head, but you have to say yes because they can't see
you. Yeah, they can't see me shaking my head.
And I think we've been in business since 1979. It's kind of an evolution. You get to the point where somebody comes in and you say, I've been at this movie before.
Right.
I've been in this rodeo before.
Yeah.
And then after a while, it's, you know, maybe some counseling, maybe some sit down and I want you to stop doing this and do more of this or whatever. And sometimes it's just a matter of you got to let them go.
Yep.
Go someplace else, perhaps get more. But the number one thing I find is they overestimate their experience. So, you know, you say, have you ever pulled a 7.3 out and resealed a 7.3 diesel? Oh, yeah. I did my lawnmower last week. Well, there's a big difference between your Briggs & Stratton and a 7.3.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, me and three or four guys with a big old 2x4 or 4x4, we lifted that 7.3 out. Oh, no, you didn't. You know, that thing weighs half as much as the truck does. But by and large, the people who do business with shops, if they look at the plaques on the wall and see that the technicians have been there they got their 10-year award, they're not there 10 years because they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And so it's kind of easy, and it's perfectly okay to say to your shop, what's the oldest technician you've got? I'm asking you.
Yeah. It's me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the next oldest tech that works for you, how many years has he worked for you?
Oh, two or three easy. So
okay.
Yeah.
And the same with me. We've got a whole lot that are in the 7 to 10 range, but the guy for us is Eddie for 32 years.
1 minute.
I mean, he was a youngster when he started here,
but that's awesome.
But and then you have skills about fixing cars and listening and diagnosing. And so do I. So it's not hard for us to figure out quickly that there somebody is misrepresenting their skill level or is answering questions about testing that they've not really done.
Right.
But that doesn't happen very often. I would say 3 or 4 times a year we run into something like that. And through the grace of God, we've been able to fix it before it left.
Yep.
And that's important. And that test drive is really important.
Absolutely.
So Nate is from Strictly Diesel, 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak Road. It's worth the drive no matter where you're at. He's just worth the drive. So if you live anywhere, call up Strictly Diesel, make an appointment, give them the brief synopsis of the symptoms, and then they'll talk to you about their plan and stuff like that.
I just want to give a quick shout-out to my crew working their tail off in these weird times we're going through. But thank you to my crew at Strictly Diesel. We're all doing a great job.
And that'll be it. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.